you each have your own style, right? You have a different approach. So you have the straight line system, you break it down, and then Ryan, you can go off of Jordan and say, okay, what's the elements that you also use and how in your field you also deviate from that?
There are similarities in sales that have to line up. In other words, before someone buys, they're gonna have to love the product they're buying, trust the person that's selling to them, trust the company that stands behind it. So there are these core elements that are not unique in any sale. They're gonna be common to anyone. How you go about lining them up is gonna differ slightly on each industry, but at some point they're all gonna converge back into the same thing. So, you know, I would think they're probably a lot more alike than they are different. Although they might appear different when you look at them without a trained eye, because his might take place over a 3-week period. And like, that's how you get someone certain in real estate. It's not like you show someone a house and hard close them on a house. There's gonna be, you might have to show them multiple homes and develop a relationship. Or if you're getting a listing, you might have to develop a relationship with that person. But ultimately, before a person's gonna give you a listing, they have to think that you're gonna do the best job at it, get it sold at the highest price without hassles. They can trust you, they have to connect with you and so forth. So that's my take on it.
So we all have the same information. And so you lead with confidence that way. And people hate being sold, but they love shopping with friends. And so I tell my staff that and our salespeople that all the time. No one likes being sold. No one likes going into any of these shops, all these high-end shops here in Monaco. You don't want someone coming up to you and saying, hey, you need new shoes. What about this? What about this deal? What about that deal? When we sell $500 products or $2,000 products, where we're selling them over the phone, then people do need to be sold. Right, it's a pushy sale, and you're selling value more than anything. And this isn't a cost, right? This is actually a savings, because the amount of money you're going to be able to make using this product, you've now saved yourself time, you've saved yourself money. So it's not a $2,000 cost, or it's a $2,000 value in a savings that's going to turn into $24,000 in additional income, etc. But going back to real estate, once you realize that people hate being sold and they love shopping with friends, then it's about finding that kind of superficial relationship that you have with everybody. And to do that over the phone can be, you know, somewhat difficult. In person, it's about finding those two C's. So the first thing is immediately give someone a compliment and then immediately find something in common, right? So you can turn anyone into a friend in less than 30 seconds or 45 seconds if you give them a compliment. And usually it can be pretty superficial. So it can be about a shirt or shoes or their new haircut or their whatever it might be, her dress, right? Or their car, especially here in Monaco. Everyone's got a cool car, nice car. That's a great compliment. And then you find something in common. You're staying in the same hotel, or you're both looking for real estate, or oh, you both like marketing or advertising. And then from there, it's a follow-up system. Like Jordan said, maybe it's a 3-week sale and getting someone to buy real estate. Maybe it's a 1-year sale. I mean, I've had deals that have taken me 6 years to get across the finish line where they finally were ready to buy. And then that's the 3 F's that we use, which is follow up, follow through, follow back. So you're following up consistently, you're following through with everything you say you're gonna do, and then you're following back over and over and over until they buy or they die. And then if they die, you go to their funeral and then you sell homes to all their friends and family.
John, I have especially a question for you. When did you really start using media? And do you wish you had started earlier?
Yeah, so I'm old. I'm older than you, right? Well, you have more gray hair than me, so.
I'm older, right, yeah.
I resisted using social media. I didn't even have an Instagram account in 2018, 2017. Okay, so I hate what social media represents and what it's done to society. That's where I live, right? My wife fucking loves it. I mean, she's taking pictures every second. She's taking pictures of her food. I mean, I don't understand what that's about, but where's your wife, by the way?
My wife's here.
Do you take pictures of your food? Admit it, do you?
Yes.
People,
if the food is pretty, we take pictures.
People take pictures of their food nowadays and post it. I still can't figure out why. But I come from a time that's just not like that, right? So when I first became famous, really famous, right, when the movie came out. Before the movie came out, I was well known around the world. I'd written a book, and it was widely read. But there's obviously a very big difference when you have Leonardo DiCaprio play you in a movie, right? I didn't even have an Instagram account back then, and I barely posted on Facebook. And I probably cost myself 20 million followers because of that. I've been very fortunate that I've made money despite that. But I certainly would have been easier to make even more money in certain aspects of my business by having a larger social footprint. So it was an error I made. And thankfully I have children who said, "Dad, you gotta fucking get your social media going." So in like 2017, I started on Facebook. But even today, I only have a couple million followers on Instagram, 4 million on TikTok, a million. I should have 20 times as many. The truth is, it's just something that I abjectly hate. I just, from the very, very core, I'm being honest with everybody here, okay? I hate what it represents. And I think that shows through in my follow through on my social media, right? But I have made a commitment to myself because I'm releasing a new book now. And I promised my publisher, Simon & Schuster, I will commit this summer to start. I haven't posted. All the posts you see, my staff just recirculating shit because, like, I refuse to, like, we want you to post, fuck you, you're fired, right? That right? Like, I really, that's how much I hate it, right? But, okay, for the last year, I've been writing a book, which is on investments, on how to make money in the stock market, right? And I worked really hard on this book. It's going to come out in October, and I'm committed. I keep threatening that for the last five. This time, I'm fucking serious. I'm going to focus on social media. But to make it relevant to everyone here, I believe social media is critically important to everyone's businesses. It's just a fact of life, okay? And if you're not on social media, you're doing yourself a big disservice. So for a business that I own, I will ensure, and I'll freak out if they don't engage in social media. So it's like, do as I say, not as I do, basically, right? But I encourage my businesses that I own to be actively engaged in it. I myself personally am under engaged in it.
What's the book called?
The Wolf of Investing.
Nice.
And going off of that, you know, Jordan hating social media, you're somebody who embraced media immediately. You wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
You then became a hand model.
Yes.
And then you're a fucking hand. Let me see this fucking.
The beautiful
hand. Is he really? Should he be a hand model? Yeah.
I was.
Nice hands.
I was. They used to be nicer.
I know a female hand model, by the way. Yeah,
do you?
I do, actually.
Nice.
A friend of mine's girlfriend was a hand model. She did really well.
Yeah, man, when you live in New York and you don't have a job and someone says, "I'll pay you $150 an hour to take photos of your hands," you're like, where do I bring them? Like, where do I go? What should I hold? And so that was like early days holding cell phones and Nespresso pods and moving the fingers like gently. And my hands were on billboards and sides of trucks holding AT&T phones. That was my big break. Yeah.
I was actually
it's true. Google it. It's out there.
I have one question because, Ryan, you right now, when you're expanding, you hire like entire teams that are with other brokers. Is that correct? Sometimes? Is that it?
Depends on the market. We'll take on entire teams. We'll absorb independent brokerages, which we do mostly, especially as we go into new markets, or we bring on individual agents, solopreneurs with one assistant or one junior agent, and then we bring them onto the platform.
Is that something that would have worked in your field where you bring in, like, absorb another stock brokerage and then bring them in? Because you mentioned that you had bad experience with experienced salespeople. And
they're very different industries. The way you know real estate works is lots of small offices around and a lot of independent agents that are on commission only, most of these people, right?
Yes.
It's very different than having salaried employees. So I could see like this, I know lots of real estate agents, they grow through acquisition and it's much easier. But we had one office in one location and there was so much about it that was about that team spirit of having one office. Now you could also, by the way, in the modern, you know, 21st century, so to speak, there's a lot you could leverage technology to still keep people feeling like they have a similar way of doing things across multiple offices. It was very, very difficult back in the day. If you had people in 10 offices, no one talked to each other. You didn't know what one person was doing. Now you can leverage technology and have a lot of people that are remote and work from home. So it's not as crucial as it once was. But, you know, again, you know, real estate's a very peculiar business. There's so many people that do real estate part-time. Yeah. It's just a very different thing. You don't have, like, part-time stockbrokers. So what might work for that industry would not work well for stockbrokers.
And you like bringing in people with experience and a network, right? You don't like training people from the start?
You know, it's a mix. It's, you know, you're balancing resources. So brand new agents are actually great because you can mold them, right? And oftentimes, if you teach someone to fish, they just want to fish with you for a long time until they develop egos and they think they're the ones who invented fish and fishing in the first place, and then they leave and want to start their own thing. So I like new salespeople. I like teaching them from the ground up so that they can learn from all of our mistakes. You know, a lot of what we do in our education side of the business is teach brand new salespeople. But coming into the brokerage, if you don't have great training for brand new people, if you're a brand new salesperson, especially in New York City or in Miami or in some of the markets that we're in, like, you don't know what to do. You know, are you just cold calling all day long? And if you do, what do you say? And if there's no one there training you, et cetera. So what we do is we do apprenticeships. And so if you've been in the business for less than 5 years, you can join, but you have to join on a team. And then once you hit certain hurdles, you can then leave the team and start your own team. But you can't come in and just be your own agent because you're bound to make mistakes. You're going to embarrass yourself. You're going to say the wrong thing. And you're also liable for lawsuits, right? You say the wrong thing to a buyer. They sign a contract and they've got you on text message or on email saying something you shouldn't have and you just didn't know better. And you've only been in the business a couple years. That's you can get in a lot of trouble. And then the brokerage is liable too.
Yeah, of course, your brand is also very important. You're building it so hard, right?
Yeah.